This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
As the great basketball philosopher Rasheed Wallace once said, ball don't lie. And as many people were saying late yesterday afternoon, myself included, Greg Brown has arrived for the Texas Longhorns. Welcome back to another edition of the Droppin' Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com. This is episode 54. The last time I talked to you guys through the Yak airwaves, we were discussing Texas winning the Maui Invitational. So there has been some time elapsed since then. The Baylor game was postponed because of Baylor's COVID issues. Texas lost a close game against Villanova. Had a weird game against Sam Houston State where they were up by 27 at one point in the second half and didn't really finish the game that well, but ended up winning by 16 points. But really what I would have focused mostly on is this recent Oklahoma State game. The Longhorns opened up Big 12 play at home against Oklahoma State yesterday with a 77-74 win. I'll get into more detail about this, but I think the win was a fairly fitting example of kind of what I think this Texas basketball team is right now, and kind of shows both some warning signs potentially, but also why this team could perhaps be different than last year's team. So we'll get into more of that. I actually wrote a column at orangeblitz.com. What was that? Saturday, published that. And I always kind of cringe a little bit when you write one of those, kind of like a season outlook type thing and assessing where the team is currently after a few games. It was seven games, but you hit send on those things, and then like there's always the chance that like the next game just totally blows up that column and doesn't match any of it. I got lucky in that it kind of matched up pretty well with some of the things I wrote. Some of the things I think played out in that Oklahoma State game, but Longhorns open up Big 12 play, 77-74 win. It's a home game. I not to get too off topic here, but one of the strangest things I've ever experienced as a professional in this industry was at that game yesterday when I was at the Irwin Center. There were maybe 400, 500 people in the arena. And Texas at one point went on a 17-0 run. 17-0. I mean, that's you don't really see many 17-0 runs during the course of a season. And the way it played out with Greg Brown making back-to-back threes, including one that was just a total heat check, even admitted it was a heat check, in front of the Texas bench. And Andrew Jones had a three that kind of bounced around the rim and rolled in and put Texas up by 13 points, which forced Oklahoma State to use another timeout in the second half. Normally when that sort of thing happens, the crowd is going crazy. I mean, even if it's not a complete full-capacity Irwin Center, I think that was the type of game, type of matchup, especially with this Texas team being ranked where it is, that we would have had a near full capacity Irwin Center, I think. There definitely would have been at least, you know, 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 people, perhaps more at that game, and the crowd would have been going crazy. So it's totally bizarre to be sitting there and covering a game where the home team goes on a 17-0 run and it's basically just silence for the most part, besides a couple hundred fans that are kind of making some noise and you can hear the Texas bench and players reacting and things like that. It's a really weird thing to experience. And I think it's going to be interesting to see as the season plays out just what kind of advantage home court is going to be for teams. You know, maybe we get into February or something like that, and hopefully the capacity of these games will start to change as the vaccine gets out more, and hopefully these coronavirus cases get under control and start lowering. But in the meantime, besides the travel component, I don't, you know, and kind of getting out of the usual routine, I'm not sure how much of an advantage home court is. I mean, yeah, shooters like shooting on their home rims, and they kind of, you know, the backdrop and things like that, and guys are comfortable with that setting, and that sort of thing definitely matters, and you're not traveling to the game, but like the fan aspect, I mean, it's really weird to cover a game like that when you have a team that goes on a run, or just like a transition slam, or some of the blocks that Greg Brown had late in the second half, people would have lost their mind as they're watching those, and it's just not really any fan reaction. But I wanted to start with Greg Brown because I think he definitely announced his arrival yesterday for the Longhorns, and this has been building for Greg Brown. He actually, the last three games, according to KenPom.com, got designated as the MVP of those games. He had 18 points against Texas State. He had 17 points and 10 rebounds against Sam Houston State, and then he erupted against Oklahoma State with 24 points, 14 rebounds and 3 blocks as well. Went to the free throw line for 11 attempts, made 3 7 threes. He was dominant for long stretches of that game, particularly in the second half when his team really needed him to be. Yeah, he still showed that he was a freshman. He missed the front end of a one-on-one after, you know, late in the game, after inexplicably the refs just, you know, handed him the ball and just kind of stopped as he was in motion shooting the ball. I've never really seen that sort of thing before. He made that free throw, and of course the refs made him shoot it over, and he missed it. I think Texas was holding on to like a 5 or 6 point lead late in that game at that point, which was, that's just bad luck for the kid. And then he had a situation on defense late in the game where he reached for a pass and freed an Oklahoma State shooter up for a three, and Oklahoma State made it and cut it to a 73-71 Texas lead with around 25 seconds or so left in the game. So, yeah, he wasn't perfect. I mean, he still is a freshman getting used to a huge jump in competition, but we saw a lot of the Greg Brown, the one-and-done type of talent, the guy that could potentially play his way into being a lottery selection in the next NBA draft, a loaded NBA draft, especially in the lottery. I mean, if you're a team in the NBA picking in the top five next year's draft, you're going to be thrilled with your selection. And he was competing against a guy that he's well familiar with, a longtime AAU teammate, Cade Cunningham, another freshman, the number one overall recruit in the country last year in the recruiting cycle, a guy projected by many to be the number one pick in the upcoming NBA draft. I personally agree with that. I think Cade Cunningham is fantastic. He might be the best player I've ever scouted in person at the high school level on the AAU circuit and things like that. So Greg admitted that he, you know, wanted to elevate his game. Big 12 opponent, competitions raised, playing against Cade, and those two didn't get matched up on each other in offensive and defensive one-on-one type situations very often, but they did a few times. And Greg got the last laugh in that situation. He had a really mean stuff of a Cunningham shot in the paint early in the game, and then late in the game had another block and almost had another one, but it was called a goaltending. He came from the help side. It's like if you're watching just a image of where the ball is in that situation in the paint. I don't even think Greg Brown was in the photo at the time that the shot went up, and he comes flying out of nowhere and blocks this shot, and actually like ends up like almost hanging on the rim a little bit after he blocks it. And it was called goaltending. It was a really close call. It looked like the ball was barely coming down. But I think that you just don't see many blocks like that, that the refs almost always are going to call that goaltending, because they're like, you don't see things like that. But Greg in those one-on-one matchups did get the best of Cade. There weren't very many of them at all. Brown actually announced his presence early in the game. Texas' first bucket was off a transition opportunity where I think it was Andrew Jones, or it may have been Courtney Ramey, was pushing the ball up the floor and found Brown cutting from the wing and ended up dunking right in front of Cade Cunningham's face. So Greg admitted that there is some trash talking going on the floor. I mean, that's the way Greg plays, and that's the way Cade plays as well. You could hear where we were sitting when Greg missed a front end of one-on-one late in the game. Cade yelled, "You suck," at him as he was grabbing the ball and bringing it up the floor. So there is definitely some competitiveness and trash talking going on there. But credit Greg Brown. I think that, to me, one of the most impressive things that he did in that win against Oklahoma State is he knew he wanted to elevate his performance. He knew he wanted to have a great game. He knew he wanted to show out in that type of situation. But he really didn't force the issue a ton. You know, yeah, he got a little shot happy at times, but he's in an offense where guys are encouraged to shoot and let the ball fly if they're in rhythm and it's a good shot and they're kind of open and that sort of thing. So I can't necessarily fault him too much for that. That's the way that Texas plays on offense. But he didn't rush. He didn't like force the game. He still kind of let the game come to him. It just so happened that he was in a situation where Texas really needed him to rebound. They needed him to provide a presence on defense. He really provided his team a spark in the second half. I mean, his fingerprints were all over that 17-0 run with those back-to-back threes and just flying up and down the floor and competing on both ends. But he didn't get tight and just try too hard to have a great game. You know, he didn't elevate his mental state to a level where he just wasn't an effective player because he wanted so hard to try to have a monster scoring line and all these highlight plays and things like that. I think the fact that he was able to mentally elevate, but also stay within himself and have that kind of game really showed some impressive maturity for a freshman that understands that, you know, his team needs him to have, you know, star-like performances, and that in order to win that game, he needed to play at a high level. So the fact that he, you know, didn't have like 8 turnovers and, you know, some ugly charges and just some reckless plays on defense and things like that, I thought might have been the most impressive thing about his performance. And if this, there was a second most impressive thing, it was his rebounding down the stretch. I think during the last minute and a half of the game, he came down with 3 crucial defensive rebounds. And there was one in particular where the ball was sky high. It was a long shot that Oklahoma State took. And the ball was just way up in the air over the top of the backboard. And you just see this guy in the crowd just jump. And it seems like his arms and his hands just kept extending and extending and extending. And eventually it's Greg Brown, and he's just like head and shoulders above the pack and just grabbing the rebound and securing it with a lot of strength and toughness and holding onto the ball and getting fouled and going to the free throw line. I mean, those were huge rebounds for Texas down the stretch, especially against an Oklahoma State team, one of the better offensive rebounding teams in the Big 12 and even nationally as well. So, I think the points will fairly get a lot of attention. The fact that he showcased kind of the total package on offense, got to the free throw line, knocked down some 3-pointers, got out in transition, really competed well on the offensive glass for some second chance opportunities. When his team needed a bucket, he just put his head down on one occasion and drew a foul and got to the free throw line. That's the type of thing that Texas has really been missing sometimes in its offense. And it really, really missed last season with somebody to just say, hey, you know what, we're struggling. I'm just going to put my head down, get into the paint, and get fouled, and get us to the free throw line, get a couple points, and maybe we can find some confidence from there. So he showcased a total package on offense. He showcased to me a guy I think that is maybe a little bit ahead offensively where some people thought he would be in college in terms of putting the ball on the floor and kind of making some things happen in that way. But really, the standout thing to me down the stretch was the rebounding, the health side defense, and just the competitiveness and the maturity that he showed in that crunch time situation. You know, we've seen freshmen before kind of, you know, get overwhelmed by those sorts of moments. And Brown didn't. In fact, he elevated himself. You know, he admitted he was a little nervy at the free throw line at one point after he missed that 1-on-1. But the next opportunity he had to shoot free throws, he made both of them, which were very, very crucial. I mean, Texas needed their free throws down the stretch to beat Oklahoma State. So Greg Brown announced his arrival. And the crazy thing is, you know, he's had these games, 3 straight games now, and his minutes have been 22, 22, and 26. It's not like he's, you know, he had 24 points and 14 rebounds in 26 minutes. It's not like the guy did this in 37 or 38 minutes. He played 26 minutes, you know, and he's had some foul trouble issues and things like that in the past. You know, the same Houston State game, he had 4 fouls. He fouled out against Indiana. He had 4 fouls against North Carolina, 4 fouls against Davidson as well. So there is that sort of component that has limited his minutes some. And he briefly, I looked like he rolled his ankle in the second half and kind of went to, I guess, sit on the bench, make sure everything was okay for a couple minutes before coming back in. But he's been extremely productive without playing like monstrously high minutes. You know, it's so who knows what some stat lines might look like if he's able to stay on the floor for 30, 32 minutes a night. But it's a big deal for the Longhorns because they needed Greg Brown yesterday. You know, they needed every bit of his performance. You know, I mentioned earlier that he got the best of Cade Cunningham in some of those one-on-one situations, but Cade Cunningham was really good. You know, Cade Cunningham ended up with 25 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. He did turn the ball over 6 times. I think that's a credit to the job that Courtney Ramey and Matt Coleman were doing on him defensively, defending him most of the night. Yeah, he got his 25 points. It took 19 shots to do it. And he was a playmaker, you know, mostly in the second half. But those 6 turnovers, you know, 6 of the team's 13 turnovers, I think realistically Texas did about as good of a job as they could in the half court on Cade Cunningham. Yeah, he got out in transition some. Texas' defense and transition defense in the first half was really, really bad, just giving up way too many opportunities to get downhill and get to the point. I think Oklahoma State shot 12 dunks or layups in the first half compared to just 6 by Texas, and that's not going to get it done in transition defense. But you know, Courtney Ramey didn't score a point after scoring in double digits for 7 straight games to begin the year. He didn't score against Oklahoma State, but he didn't let that bother his defense. His competitiveness and his urgency on defense remained really, really high, and he was up for the challenge of trying to guard Cade Cunningham, even when Cunningham would take those smaller guards down to the post. I thought Ramey did a good job of playing with a little bit of physicality and at least making those situations a little difficult for him. It wasn't very pretty down the stretch at times for Texas closing out that game. At one point, they led 70-61, allowed Oklahoma State to claw their way back. You know, a half-court offense, a little bit of an issue down the stretch. They had, Andrew Jones had a really ugly turnover when he got trapped near the sideline, near the half-court line, and just, you know, kind of reminiscent of some things that happened against Villanova, where Texas was in that game tied late with a chance to win, but simply made more mistakes than Villanova did down the stretch. And Villanova looked like a more poised, fundamentally sound team that made Texas pay for its mistakes, and that's ultimately what decided the game. So there was a little bit of that element against Oklahoma State, and that's something that Texas will definitely need to clean up moving forward, because they're going to be in a lot of these types of games in the Big 12. I mean, this, what you saw yesterday at the Irwin Center is going to be Big 12 basketball this year. I'm not even sure it matters who plays who. Yeah, you're going to see some blowouts at times. I mean, Baylor just absolutely blew the doors off of Kansas State the other day. Baylor's really, really good. I think Baylor and Gonzaga are the clear top two teams in the country right now. Those two teams look like they're in midseason form and really performing at a high level, especially on offense. But mostly you're going to see these types of games in the Big 12, these close games down the stretch where it comes down to whose guards are better, whose best players are better, and who makes fewer mistakes. And Texas did make a couple mistakes down the stretch, but with Brown's rebounding and his ability to get to the free throw line, the defense's ability to get some stops, and the offense to make some free throws ended up being enough to keep that separation the whole way. But I think this Oklahoma State game was a great example of where I think this Texas team is right now. And if we try to forecast what this team could look like looking ahead, I think this was a good representation of that, because I kind of make this comparison in my column published on Saturday to, you know, the warning signs last year. Around this time, you know, I think it was December 21st when Texas went to Providence last year and got absolutely smoked. And they got bullied. They got embarrassed. It was really evident after that game that Texas simply was a poor matchup against teams that were physical and tough and aggressive. We saw that when Georgetown beat them in New York in that non-conference early tournament in that season. Then Providence did it, and then Baylor would do it a few days after that, when Big 12 play opened. But if you looked statistically at the way Texas was performing that season, you know, BartTorvik.com assigns an individual game score for every single game. So basically, he takes the offensive efficiency and the defensive efficiency and multiplies it by 100, and it produces his version of of his overall ranking system. So as the season progresses, each game gets an overall ranking, and those overall rankings make up the team's overall ranking for the season. And each individual game score, in theory, would be what would be the expected production by the team with that overall team ranking. For example, Texas against North Carolina earlier this year had a 93 game score. It goes from 1 to 100, or 0 to 100. So the expectation would be, based on how Texas performed in its offense and its defense relative to its opponent, number 7 Virginia would be expected to have that kind of game against North Carolina, because Texas had a 93 game score. Basically, their overall rating would be reminiscent of like 93 in the formula ranking system, which is around 7th in the country. So if you look at what Texas was doing last year at this time, its consistency was all over the place. It had a couple great performances. It had a couple absolutely horrible performances. It had a couple average performances, a couple bad, a couple good. It just was all over the map. And it was evident at this time last year that there's these warning signs, like just screaming. You know, I compared it to Clark Griswold in Christmas Vacation when he's messing with the lights and he's trying to get the lights to light up and they can't figure out why the lights aren't lighting. And he's just mad. And, you know, there's that moment where they go in, I believe it's like it's not the attic, but it's some other room in the house kind of hidden away where they flip the switch. The lights come on briefly. And he's like, oh my gosh, I figured it out. And then somebody turns him back off. And he's like, what happened? And then eventually he gets them going again because they flipped that switch. And his neighbors, they unintentionally destroy their house because the light is so blinding. It's just, it was blinding them, and then it was off, and then it was blinding them again, and they had to fall down the stairs and spill their wine and break a bunch of glasses and tables and all sorts of things because the lights were so blinding. And to me, that was Texas's warning signs at this point last year. They were blinding. They weren't tough. They weren't physical. They weren't aggressive. But really, their half-court offense would have these huge scoring drops and issues where they were just too perimeter oriented on offense and just would jack up shots. They wouldn't get the ball into the paint consistently. They weren't pushing the ball in transition. They didn't play with enough pace in the half court. The player movement wasn't there. It's just they were some really glaring offensive issues, and they were big issues because Texas wasn't going to change the way it was going to play offense. And that necessarily hasn't changed this year. I mean, they have their system, and that's the way they play, despite the fact that there are these glaring warning signs that were just screaming out. Well, so I'm looking back at Texas' previous games this season and kind of comparing it with those game scores. And the consistency is totally different. This has been, if you look at these game scores and based on offensive and defensive efficiency, relative opponent, things like that, this has been a pretty consistent Texas basketball team. Its lowest game score of the year was 82 against Villanova. So basically what a top 50 team would be expected to perform against Villanova. So that's the lowest point. They've had 82, 83, 83, 89, 93, 95, 97, and 100. So you're not getting any of those just disastrous performances like Texas had last year. You're not getting any of those that are just totally at the bottom, closer to zero, and then they're closer to 50. You're getting a lot of these, the worst being a top 50 type team performance so far this season. You're not getting these dramatic swings, and you're not getting these dramatic swings in offense and defense either. If you look at the adjusted offensive efficiency, its high mark this year was against Davidson, 125.8. Its low mark was 100.3 against Villanova. But everything's kind of been around that 106, 107, 109, 110 range. It was 113.3 against Oklahoma State. It's been pretty consistent. You look at the defense, it has that one standout performance against Indiana, which is actually the best performance of the Shaka Smart era for adjusted defensive efficiency. But really, you're also getting a lot of stuff in the 80s, low 90s. There's only been one poor win, which was against Davidson. So you're getting consistency in both the offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. Say that three times fast. While it might not look the same visually, it hasn't. Some games the offense looks better than other games. Some games the defenses look better than other games, whether it's transition, half court, whatever. Visually, it hasn't always looked the same. There's been times when Texas was great from the three-point line, that was bad from the three-point line, times when it was, you know, great on the glass, okay or bad on the glass. It hasn't always looked the same. But in terms of just the overall game efficiency and those game performances, Texas has been pretty consistent. And to me, there are kind of those same warning signs, not entirely the same as last season. I think this team is a better physically tough team, a more aggressive team, a more competitive team, both mentally and physically, than last year's group was until it was, you know, basically forced to play Brock Cunningham and Royce Hamm down the stretch of last season when its hallmark became just its aggressiveness and its toughness and its defense. That definitely wasn't the case early on last season. But I think there's still kind of those similar warning signs from the offensive standpoint, which is what we saw against Oklahoma State. And I kind of made this comparison to, you know, last season was the Clark Griswold lights and blinding the neighbors and they're destroying their house. This year, it's kind of like, you know, if you ever got those Furby toys growing up, like I had one growing up, that was one of the things for Christmas. And if you had a couple of them together and you put them in the closet, there'd be times randomly in the night where they just would start talking to each other. And it would terrify you initially until you kind of figured out what was going on. That's kind of the warning signs for this Texas team, I think. Like, they're there, and they might kind of frighten you unsuspectingly, but they're not like blinding, oh my gosh, they're going to destroy everything type of warning signs. But they're there. They're still there. And there's going to be occasions like the first half against Oklahoma State yesterday where they present themselves and they startle you, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, what is happening? What is that noise coming from, and why is it scaring me? That was kind of Texas in the first half yesterday, where they shot way too many three-pointers. They were too perimeter oriented on offense. They didn't get the ball into the paint enough. And they turned the ball over too much. I mean, they had 9 first half offensive rebounds, but they couldn't really capitalize on that because they had 9 first half turnovers as well. And their transition defense was so poor that they were allowing Oklahoma State to get out and run off of their bad perimeter misses. And it's just like, okay, this is, you know, I had a friend text me when he was watching this game in the first half, and he goes, "Texas is back on its bullshit again." And I'm like, yeah, that's a fair way to describe it, because that's what it looked like, you know, because this Texas offense isn't going to change in terms of its general overall philosophy. Now, they're doing some different things in terms of spacing and a couple different actions, and there's more cutting away from the ball and things like that. But generally speaking, it's the same offense. It's a guard-driven offense where the freedom and the decision-making is in those guards' hands to go make plays. I mean, Shaka Smart said it after the game when I asked him about the offense. You know, I asked him, you know, what changed. Was it just as simple as guys just running it better with, you know, better aggressiveness and things like that? And he said, I don't remember the exact quote, but he said something along the lines of, I told them I could diagram up a bunch of stuff for them to run, but it wouldn't matter if they didn't do it aggressively in the right way. And that I think is a good way to summarize what his approach is with this team. The mental approach and just the aggressiveness and driving the ball into the paint and moving the ball around quickly trumps this idea of running all these different, you know, controlled half-court sets where it's like it basically you're taking away a lot of that freedom from the players. And this is going to be Texas on offense. This is who they are. This is what they're going to be. And in the second half, it was much, much better. I think in the first half, their points per possession mark was something like 0.78. In the second half, they almost doubled that. I think it was 1.41, which is a ridiculously good mark. Anytime you're scoring that many points, you're going to win basketball games. I mean, that would be that kind of outfit would be historically great on offense over the course of a season. So they came out in the second half, more mature approach, more competitive approach on offense. They cut down on the turnovers. They started getting to the free throw line more. They started getting out in transition better. And they started getting the ball into the paint a lot more. And what drove me nuts about the first half was when Texas did get the ball into the paint sometimes, it kept wanting to push the ball out to the corners instead of trying to get the ball further into the paint or to involve those bigs near the rim or as a roll man in certain situations. They come out in the second half. One of the first plays they run is a ball screen and roll with Jericho Sims. And it looked like they kind of changed where they were running that ball screen action and where the big man was going to roll. And it led to a dunk for Jericho Sims. And it's like, that's the type of stuff they've got to do more often. You know, they wanted to in the first half, dribble around the perimeter, dribble, pound the ball into the floor. When they drive in there, just kick it out to the corners and try swinging it around for threes. And that's not who they are. Yeah. They're going to be games when they shoot the ball really well from beyond the arc. And it looks better on the scoreboard than it does visually, but they're not going to be able to do that consistently. What they have to do is what they did in the second half. Get the ball into the paint with the intent on, get to the free throw line, get into the rim for layups or dunks, or when you do kick the ball out, attack those closeout situations by getting to the free throw line or getting back into the paint or moving the ball around with so much pace that you're shooting wide open threes in rhythm. And Texas did a better job of that in the second half. And I think another reason why this game was a good example of, you know, what Texas could become and kind of those signs of why this team is a little bit different. Its offensive rebounding was good. And Oklahoma State's offensive rebounding was just, I'd say, average. And this was a really good offensive rebounding Oklahoma State team. And for Texas to keep them, find their percentage real quick, Oklahoma State finished with just 25.6% of its offensive rebounding opportunities. Texas finished with 34.9. You can win some games doing that effort on the glass. And a lot of that was Greg Brown, because if you look, Jericho Sims, 3 rebounds. Royce Ham, 0 rebounds in 8 minutes. Brock Cunningham, 1 rebound in 4 minutes. Kai Jones, 4 rebounds in 24 minutes. So a lot of the rebounding heavy lifting was actually done by, you know, Matt Coleman had 7 rebounds. Andrew Jones had 7 rebounds. And then Greg Brown had 14 rebounds. And then Donovan Williams, who I think provided his team with a really nice spark in the second half, just flying around, playing aggressively, and just really competing. He had 5 rebounds in 13 minutes, and 4 of them were on the offensive end. That was a sneaky, I think, big moment for Donovan Williams to have that kind of game where he just made a lot of plays by just playing really hard and attacking the ball. And I thought it was interesting that he played clearly ahead of Gerald Liddell, who did not play at all. And I think as those two are kind of been competing for that rotation spot, that final rotation spot, I think it's clearly in Donovan Williams' favor right now. But you kind of saw a glimpse of why this Texas team could be much different than last year's team, even though there still is that lingering warning sign of what can happen to them on offense when they played the way they did against Oklahoma State. They ended up getting to the free throw line a lot. And I know some of that was skewed by the fouls at the end of the game. But even before that, in the second half, they're doing a much better job getting to the free throw line. They won the battle on the glass with their offensive rebounding. I mean, that's what they want to be. They want to be a great offensive rebounding team that just attacks that glass because there's a rhythm to know, hey, when a shot might go up in the offense, let's use our athleticism and our length to go make some plays. They cut down on their turnovers in the second half. They only had 3 second half turnovers. And with those 3 guards, Ramey, Jones, Coleman, they need 2 of those guys every night to have good games. If all 3 have a good game, they're going to win, I think. I don't even think it matters who they play. I think they're going to win if all 3 of those guys have a good game. But if they get 2 of the 3, they've got a chance every single night to win. And that's what they got. You know, after Matt Coleman's slow first half, he ended up with 15 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, no turnovers in 40 minutes. I mean, that's incredible. 0 turnovers in 40 minutes. That's really impressive. Andrew Jones had his best game of the season, 22 points. Shot 5 of 11 on 2s, 3 of 6 from beyond the arc, 3 of 3 from the free throw line, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 turnovers in 35 minutes. So Courtney Ramey didn't score. I mean, he competed well on the defensive end, didn't score. But because they had 2 of those main 3 guards that had good games, you know, loosely speaking, Matt Coleman wasn't great, but it was a good college game. 15 points, and you know, you don't turn the ball over, and you have 7 rebounds, 4 assists. Andrew Jones with 22 points. That's kind of their formula. 2 of those 3 guards have a good game. Win the battle on the offensive glass, get some second chance opportunities. Get out, transition, and run some. Get to the free throw line. And just make enough 3-pointers to where when you look in the box score afterward, you're not shaking your head at, oh my gosh, they took more 3s than 2s, which they didn't. I mean, it was close, but they didn't because they had better shot selection in the second half. But you're winning the battle in terms of how many total points you're getting from beyond the arc. And Oklahoma State had just 5 threes, 15 points, whereas Texas had 9 threes, 27 points. So if you can win that battle, just the overall points accumulated from threes, and you're getting to the free throw line at a pretty good rate, and you're still taking more 2s than 3s because you're getting out transition, you get to the paint some, that's got to be their method. It can't be what we saw in the first half. And what we saw in the first half is remains that lingering warning sign about, you know, this team, because defensively they've been pretty consistent. And Shocker Smart even said after the game, this Texas team has the potential to be the best Texas defensive team that he's had. And that's saying something because he's had some good defenses. Last year's defense, 24th in efficiency. A year before that, 26th. The year before that, finished 12th, which has been his best Texas defense. And that was the Muhammad Bamba defense that finished 12th in defense efficiency. And right now, their adjusted defensive efficiency it's basically almost 5 full points. It is 5 full points ahead of their previous best mark, which was actually last season. It just ranked 24th because there are more better defenses in college basketball. But you get the point. This defense so far has performed like the best defense that Shocker Smart has had at Texas. And he said it has the potential to be that defense. And that's what they want their calling card to be. But they also spent so much time emphasizing competing on the offensive glass. And we didn't see that against Villanova and North Carolina, which kind of, to me, was a little bit of concern. Those are two teams that, you know, two of the better teams that they've played. North Carolina's front court is, I think, the best front court in the country in terms of rebounding. I mean, they get after it on the glass. But overall, this has been, by far, Shaka Smart's best offensive rebounding percentage team at Texas. So far, we're working from a small sample here, but that rate is dramatically up from last season. The free throw rate is dramatically up from last season. The three-point rate is still the same. It's basically very, very similar, and that kind of gets back to what I was saying. The same warning sign is present about what this team does in the half-court offense sometimes. But the defense has been consistently great. The offensive rebounding has been better. It has been totally consistent, but he's definitely been better overall. The free throw rate has been better overall, and they're playing with more pace on offense as well, which I think is a tribute to getting out in transition more, throwing the ball up the floor and attacking with the intent to get to the rim, to the free throw line, instead of dribble, 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 push a ball up the floor that way. I mean, throw it up the floor. It's something we've seen Texas do a lot, is pass the ball up the floor and beat a defense back, even after makes in some situations. So I think the Oklahoma State game was a we might look back at that and say, you know what, that could be a big moment from Texas, because if they start they start Big 12 play 0-1, and then the next matchup in Big 12 play is the game at Kansas, you're probably staring at 0-2. That's a tough situation to dig yourself out of, from maybe from a mental standpoint as well, as you're trying to be a team that competes for a Big 12 championship. So to hold on down the stretch for Greg Brown to kind of have that coming out party, but really just the stark difference between the first half and the second half, it's got to be a really important lesson for Shaka Smart and those guys, and that this is how we have to play on offense if we're going to be able to consistently win these types of games in the Big 12. It can't be like the first half. That's the warning sign. Those are the Furbies waking you up in the middle of the night, talking to each other in the closet, and you think somebody's breaking into the house. That's that warning sign. It's not the blinding lights of last year, but it's still definitely there. And we saw that against Oklahoma State, where it's kind of a tale of two halves, but Texas was ultimately more mature in the second half, made more plays, and ended up winning the basketball game. And oh, by the way, won the battle on the glass as well. So with that, let's wrap up episode 54 of the Droppin' Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com. If you're not an Orange Blood subscriber, come on, get on board. Especially with this Texas basketball team, they got a chance to be good. And I'm really proud of the coverage we provide you there at orangebloods.com with our post-game columns, our podcasts, our analysis pieces throughout the season. So get to orangebloods.com. We're probably going to be running a promo soon again. So if you're not a member, maybe hold off and wait on that promo to get yourself a good deal. My column I wrote on Saturday is free. You can find that at orangebloods or follow me at DeanMcComasOB on Twitter. But you can get to theyak.com, check out all of our great podcasts, a lot of football stuff going on. It's been a ride with the Texas football program the last few weeks. So there's some really, really entertaining podcasts about the Texas football situation right now at theyak.com, so check out those as well. But Christmas is fast approaching. Happy holidays to all you guys listening out there. Thanks for tuning in and listening and keeping up with Texas athletics through our podcast at theyak.com. I hope all of y'all stay safe. Wear a mask. I hope everybody has a great Christmas. Mix in some Pennsylvania Dutch eggnog. Trust me, it makes any Christmas day or holiday event or whatever, it makes it better. Trust me, it's really, really good. It's got a kick as well. So consider that Santa Dustin's advice to you. Go get a big handle of Pennsylvania Dutch eggnog for $17 and just enjoy. But mainly, stay safe. I know people are going to be traveling during the holidays. Wear a mask. Take your temperature. There's light at the end of the tunnel with this damn virus, and hopefully we can get into the Big 12 tournament or something like that, where things might be back to normal again, which seems like it might be 8 or 9 months away, but really, March isn't that far away. So until I talk to you guys next time, stay safe. Take care.